Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. Think San Francisco is the gayest place in America? Well, the Provincetown Business Guild claims that distinction for Provincetown, Massachusetts. The guild cites data from the U.S. Census Bureau and support from gay.com and gaycities.com, which named Provincetown the number one gay community and best resort town in America. The Cape Cod Business Group's magazine goes on to say that Provincetown, and I quote, is not merely gay-friendly. We are gay, gay, gay. And since many of my friends seem to love the place, I decided to cross the country for a visit and find out for myself if and why P-Town deserves its reputation. Stick around and hear from the piano lounge singer who's been there for 50 years, the artist who made a dress out of tampon applicators, and other colorful folks from the spot where the Pilgrims first landed. It wasn't Plymouth Rock.
Well, it's one of the most beautiful places in the country, in the world, so that's, you know, queers tend to gravitate towards beautiful places.
It's been an art colony since 1899, and it appears to me that wherever you find the arts, you're going to find our subculture. I'm a native San Franciscan, and the town grabbed my heart. It felt like home.
It's the light, it's the people, it's a wonderful community of sharing, of artists, you know, a place where, you know, I fell in love with once I became involved here.
Provincetown really is a very safe, interesting, you know, place to be. It's very rural in the winter, and it's very sophisticated in the summer.
The bars close here at 1. It can be a long night at the Dick Dock.
I always get choked up when I think about this. I don't know, I take Provincetown for, I don't take it for granted, but I just feel like the rest of the world is like Provincetown, and I realize when I see couples coming in that perhaps it isn't.
If you spend an evening, you'd want to stay. Watching the moonlight on Cape Cod Bay. You're sure to fall.
Bobby Weatherby. I've been a piano player here in Provincetown for 50 years. This marks the 50th year I've been in this place, and I've seen the changes and the people come and go, and went through era after era after era of places opening, closing, and all the movements. There was always the wonderful gay atmosphere here, but it was really never spoken about. It was the well-kept secret, and everybody knew. The fishermen knew. When I came here, there was, as I said, it was predominantly a Portuguese fishing village. There were minimal guest houses, minimal. I don't think there were five. And it was so funny because the Portuguese women, of course, did not acknowledge that there were gay men in her boarding house. But a lot of them would go in the morning to see how many heads were in there. And she'd charge you by the head. So it was a very, very. They didn't acknowledge it, but boy, they knew.
They knew
in the morning when the bills were being paid. In those days, you couldn't drag here. It was sort of an unwritten thing. You could not drag. You could comb your hair. You could put on a beaded top, but there was no dress. The second year, and where I stayed for a goodly amount of time, I was here as a performer. It was a place called the Ace of Spades, and it was what now is the Pied Piper. And it was a woman's bar, although the owner was a straight woman and extremely strict. Women could not walk with glasses, and she only had men on the floor. She would not have a lesbian or a gay woman at all. The hippies came in, nothing against hippies, but the Portuguese natives were so happy that they had straight people here, enjoying the alternate lifestyle or whatever they called it. And then they realized that they weren't staying in their boarding houses, they were living on the beach, and they weren't eating in their restaurants because they were smoking dope all the time. And they kind of said, uh-oh, we best do something about this. We best be a little kinder to those gay men, those funny men. And that's actually when the transition started, because they became much more open to the fact that homosexuality lived and lived big.
You know, we were better than the hippies at least.
Oh, yes, yes. One step up. Uh-huh. One little step up because we had disposable income. Things became a little more open after about my 8th, 9th year here.
Early 70s, we're talking.
Early 70s. If you like a ukulele lady, ukulele lady like a you. If you want a lingo every shady, ukulele lady linger too. You kiss a ukulele lady kiss you.
I'm Char Priolo. I'm in Provincetown, Massachusetts. I'm a concierge at the local Chamber of Commerce office. Came in 1983, the first time when a band that I was part of was brought to Provincetown, the Fabulous Dyketones. We were a 50s rock and roll review, 50s and 60s. We changed the pronouns to almost everything, but yeah. At the end of our show, we used to run to the back of the showroom and just make a line and shake people's hands as they left. And so many times, it would be an older woman that I affectionately call an old-timey dyke, which I now am.
And funny how things change.
And just keep rolling. And she would have tears quietly streaming down her face. And I think of this one woman who looked in my eyes and said, "This is my music." And the first time around, I had to sit on the sidelines, and now I'm dancing with my girl. Now, as back in, you know, eons ago, the Portuguese are the world's greatest sailors, or some of them anyway, and they came over on explorers' ships. And this is a very, very safe harbor. And the cod, I mean, there are all these legends and tales about cod jumping in the fishermen's boats. You know, it was just so plentiful.
So that's how Cape Cod got the name. I was wondering where that had come from.
That's one of the stories, yeah. Sadly enough, people that have enough money want to come here and say, "Oh my God, I love it," get here and want to change it. You know, away from the wonderful little village that it has been to a more high-end, trendy place, so that the native population, which is dwindling, which is the Portuguese-American population, if their kids graduate and want to come back from college to live here, they can't afford it. They can't even buy mom and dad's house because usually there's, hate to say it, well, I love to say it, though, gay men that have enough money to give them cash, more cash than they've ever seen in their life. And so the whole demographics has changed quite a bit. Our year-round population here is around 2,800, a little bit plus. There's probably a little under 1,000 Portuguese Americans here now. It's been an art colony since 1899, and it appears to me that wherever you find the arts, you're going to find our subculture. And I think with that welcoming kind of factor prevalent in the town, gay and lesbian people felt at home here.
It's credited as being America's oldest continuous art colony, and many of the great artists, American artists, Child Hassam, Marsden Hartley, Franz Klein, Hans Hoffmann, they all passed through and or stayed here. You know, they found the light, the camaraderie of their other artist friends during World War I when it wasn't safe to go to Europe. Many of them came here to paint and wound up settling here. I'm Jim Bacher, and I'm the vice president at the Provincetown Art Association Museum. I also serve on the art commission for the town, president of the Cape and Islands Historical Association, so I'm pretty well entrenched here in Provincetown.
Mm-hmm.
It started probably, you know, it was a fishing community. It was a Portuguese community, and the fishermen not only provided food, but subject matter. You know, in the town hall, you see this wonderful painting of the fisherman coming in, you know, by Hawthorne, and he loved to paint the fish as much as he liked to paint the people. The light in Provincetown is incredible because, one, you're surrounded on all sides by water. And between the reflection and the way this happens, you know, many photographers, world famous like Joel Meyerowitz, have come here to do their photographs. There have been books on Cape Light. So it became pretty, you know, world famous in the early 1900s. In 1916, the Boston Globe called it the biggest art colony in the world. So it's been, you know, acclaimed for many, many years, and painters continue to come here.
My name is Jay Critchley, and I've been here over 30 years. Well, when people ask me, what kind of art do you make, I say everything but painting. I work with a lot of found materials. I do temporary installations. I do performance art, video, movies, and I'm also a writer. In the 70s and 80s, the most obvious trash on the beach were these plastic tampon applicators, which most of them floated over from Boston's sewage system. They would be dumped in the Boston Harbor when there was an overflow when it rained. And I didn't know what they were at first. I mean, even though I had six sisters, I never saw a tampon in my house with one bathroom. Now, you figure that one out. So anyway, I started collecting them. I started making sculptures with them. And then I made a gown for the centennial of the Statue of Liberty, and I called it Miss Tampon Liberty. It was about, you know, freedom for the environment. There was a rally at Liberty State Park, so I wore the gown. It had 3,000 plastic applicators on it. I used Emma Lazarus's poem, which is at the foot of the Statue of Liberty, which is about the wretched refuse of our teeming shore.
Provincetown, like most gay locales, was hit hard by AIDS in the 1980s.
Provincetown, being a small seaside community, attracted a lot of people when AIDS was in the 80s, and a lot of people came, a lot of men came here to die. They thought, well, if I'm going to die, why not die in a beautiful place? You know, there were so many funeral services, there were so many memorial services that you couldn't keep up with it. It was just, like, devastating. I mean, I've lost two or three boyfriends and dozens and dozens of friends. Provincetown, I think, was a model community. You know, the town really, really responded. All sections of the community responded.
Critchley and a friend were inspired to start Swim for Life, a fundraiser for AIDS service organizations.
1988, my friend Walter McLean and I were swimming in Provincetown Harbor, and we thought, let's see if we can swim across. And everyone was like, no, you're not going to swim across. The bluefish are feeding and things like that. So we got a boat, and we went across to Long Point, and we actually made the swim across, and we're like, wow, we did it.
How long of a swim is that?
It's 1.4 miles. So 2 weeks later, we had the first Swim for Life, and we had 16 swimmers, and we raised, I think, $7,000. And so that was 1988. So last year was our 25th year, and we've raised over $3 million. And we have about 400 swimmers from all over the country and outside the country. It's just this incredibly high-energy event that I think captures the inherent spirit of Provincetown that's kind of like slipping away because of all the development and all of the money that's come into town. So it's kind of like an old-time Provincetown grassroots experience.
Provincetown also came together when Massachusetts became the first state to legalize same-sex marriage in 2004.
Who's got the ding-dong? Who's got the bell? Somebody know, but nobody tell. 'Cause somebody bad stole the wedding bell.
My name is Doug Johnstone. I'm the town clerk in the town of Provincetown, Massachusetts. The very first day of same-sex marriage in Massachusetts would be May 17th, 2004. We had over 200 couples come in that day alone between the hours of 8 and noon, actually. They all came in early, of course.
And a spontaneous kind of celebration erupted around Town Hall throughout the day. It was a cool day for Massachusetts, May 17th. We have pictures in front of Town Hall. You couldn't squeeze through. Even then, couples were shocked at the welcome. You know, we celebrated that. And how well they were treated, not just by, well, by a government office of all things, but also from the town, that they could be themselves. And I'd like to think that people could be this way everywhere. That first year, the advent of same-sex marriage, 2004, we're really talking about a seven-month period because it started the tail end of May, went through December. We had a little over 900 marriage filings, which the year before in 2003, we only had 20. So that's an entire year we had 20. And this year with 2004, with just 7 months, we had a little over 900. So we went from nothing to everything in the course of a year. It actually turned out to be the most amazing experience. My first inclination was to go to the community for help, and I did go to some various organizations in town, the Provincetown Business Guild, Chamber of Commerce, and had about 75 trained volunteers so that we had greeters when people came up the steps, people guiding them into the room. The room was set up with banks of tables so volunteers could help them with the paperwork. We had typists who then typed up the marriage license because, believe it or not, even then the state didn't have these forms on computer, which fortunately they do now. And it was just turned out to be a wonderful event, but I couldn't have done it without the help of the community, which also says a lot about Provincetown. It wasn't just gay men, lesbians. It was, I mean, we had a woman at the information table because, believe it or not, then we all had to get blood tests. That was another little wrinkle because people coming weren't aware, so we had to give them that information and where to go in town. That was conducted by Annette Chose, who sadly just died a few years ago. But grandmother, elderly at the time, on oxygen, sitting in the hallway giving out this information. And that's just indicative of Provincetown. You know, it's when you need help, you get it from all members of the community. And we don't, I'd like to think we don't really segregate ourselves in that way.
Johnstone and his husband were married then, too.
We were concerned in Massachusetts that the right to marriage might have been taken away. So a lot of us didn't have the luxury of planning that we might have liked. Plus, I was able to become a June bride. It's always a nice thing. But fortunately, we live in Massachusetts, and other states now are you know, thinking about equality. And I think it is a matter of time, but I never thought I'd see this in my lifetime, never considered that marriage would be an option for me as a teenager. And now, of course, it's a given, and other states have joined us. It's just a remarkable thing. It really gives me such hope.
Hi, I'm Eric Jansen. Another remarkable thing. For 10 years, Marilyn Pittman and I have been producing and hosting Out in the Bay here on KALW. We're celebrating with a party and show taping Wednesday, April 29th, 5 to 8 p.m. at Oasis Nightclub in San Francisco. Food from La Mediterranea and Bacon Bacon, live music, drinks, and we'll record a show before a live audience, sharing juicy behind-the-scenes stories and some of our favorite clips. That's Wednesday, April 29th at Oasis. Join us, won't you? Tickets and more info at outinthebay.org. Where you can also get free podcasts and hear past shows. That's outinthebay.org. Proceeds benefit Out in the Bay and KALW. Now back to Provincetown.
Some of the town leaders like to say this is not a place where anything goes, but absolutely. Like I mentioned, this is a seafaring town. This is sailors and people from around the world, from Hawaii, from Portugal, from the Azores. Come to town. You know, you get off a whaling ship after 3 years, 2 years, or a year. What are you looking for? You're looking to party.
Provincetown used to have quite a reputation for sex in the dunes, but not so much anymore.
I think that I think the Park Service, and particularly used to be more vigilant about arresting people. I mean, they used to be with binoculars looking way away and, you know, but also the whole cruising thing, as you know, everywhere has changed. I mean, people are not cruising as much anymore. They're online or they're on, their smartphones checking people out. So there's not a lot of sex now that goes on in the dune part of the park. There used to be, like, a lot of people there. There's no one there now. Well, Dick Dock is on the beach in the harbor, and it's a place where people go at night to have sex. And sometimes there can be 200 or 300 people there. I mean, it's that.
Still today.
Yeah. Well, not in the summer. Yeah, in the summer. Yeah, there can be that many people there at night, like after, generally after the bar closes. The bars close here at 1, in case people don't know. So it can be a long night at the Dick Dock.
This is right near the boat slip?
Yes,
or where?
Near the boat slip.
Which is famous for its tea dances, right?
The tea dance at the boat slip, yes.
I'm Cass Benson. I own the Harbor Lounge in Provincetown, which is a waterfront bar. I've lived here for about 20 years. We moved here because it was really getting to be time to leave the city. And Provincetown really is a very safe, interesting, you know, place to be. It's very rural in the winter, and it's very sophisticated in the summer. So you get the best of both worlds.
What do you notice as far as the mix between the lesbians and the gay men here and how they kind of interact and how that's changed over the 20 years that you've been here?
Well, I think that unfortunately we've lost a lot of the lesbian bars. So that probably means we have more gay men coming here. You know, women do come here and do enjoy it. I think they enjoy it in just a different way, not as much nightlife for like the lesbians as much as there is for the gay guys. And that I think it's a preference. I mean, I think that the women just don't go out as much as the men. We have family week here in August. And, yeah, I suppose it's mostly the lesbians who have kids. Here comes my kids.
Oh, okay.
But it's a lot of gay men, too.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Come on in. No, come on over.
Hi, honey.
Hi.
They love the bar. What can I say? Oh, they love their bar. Like, they can't wait till they can bartend. What can I say? This is my partner, Mary Alice. Yeah.
Hello. Let's have her join us. For people visiting, is there, like, still... Is it better to come in the summer? Or is it better to come in the fall or spring? And
It depends on what you're looking for. I mean, the summer is insane. It's insane. Especially Carnival Week. There are so many people here. And there's just parties. And everyone is sort of, like, just sort of letting it all hang out. And people who like things a little bit quieter. September is a wonderful month here. The water is I think probably the best it is.
The warmest
and we still have wonderful sunlight, and I in fact September is my favorite month. So I think people who in September are a little more mellow. They've been through their summer and now they just want to sort of relax and have a good time.
Among the great advice I got for visitors to Provincetown was, be careful you don't get hooked.
Please come and experience Provincetown and get out on the water. Get your feet in the sand. I mean, so many people come here, they never touch the sand. You know, they lay out on a deck. I mean, yeah, enjoy your cocktails and lay out on the deck, but get out to Herring Cove at least. The first art project I did was a series of automobiles in the parking lot, right on the waterfront parking lot. It was called Just Visiting for the Weekend. And it was a series of sand-encrusted cars, sand-covered cars, sand-filled cars, and sand-blasted cars. But the whole idea of Just Visiting for the Weekend was the idea that people would come to Provincetown. Literally, people would say to you, I came for the weekend and I moved. You know, like they found their place in the world. And that it's that kind of thing.
I'm a native San Franciscan, and the town grabbed my heart. It felt like a neighborhood in San Francisco. I heard the foghorns every day. People watched each other's kids and houses for each other. It felt like home.
You know, I love Provincetown. I hope that people listening who have been here know what I'm talking about. And if you don't, come and visit. You know, it's worth it.
You can be sitting on the benches in front of Town Hall with a straight man in a dress carrying on a conversation. Oh, yeah, we have a whole week for them. Fantasia Fair. They bring their wives, and they have seminars. They have fashion shows. They have talent shows. They have cooking shows. It's mammoth now. It's in its 25th year. It's a wonderful thing for the hemped up guy that wants to wear a dress. And the only thing that bothers me is that the tourists will come in and they go, oh, there's a gay boy. And I'm going, no, we would have little more taste than that, dear. A little more taste than that.
Okay, thank you. You've been delightful. Hi, I'm Eric. What's your name? What's your name?
Jack.
Hey, Jack. How you doing?
Good.
Do you think Provincetown is a great place for kids?
Yeah.
No.
There's a great place to
jump off the pier.
Sure.
What else do you get to do?
You're sure to fall in love with
I enjoyed my stay and plan to go back sometime purely for pleasure. No interviews. There's a lot to do around Provincetown, from bike rides in the dunes and strolls along the beach to a variety of evening entertainment, lots of bars, fine dining, and don't forget the lobster rolls or the 50-some art galleries. It seems there's a special week or weekend for just about everything and everyone, from Carnival Week in August, the Tennessee Williams Festival in September, Women's Week in October, and even Fantasia, a yearly event for hetero, mostly married men who like to dress in women's clothes. Yes, really, Fantasia. Google it. If you're considering... Hi, I'm Eric Jansen. You just heard one of my personal favorite shows from 10 years of bringing queer air to your ears. Nora El-Maliki was associate producer and editor of our tour of P-Town. Thanks, Nora. If you're curious to visit Provincetown, find links to lots of information on our website, outinthebay.org, where you can hear this whole show if you missed the beginning. It's featured on the homepage this week. Now the 10 years bit. Yes, Marilyn Pittman and I have been producing Out in the Bay for a decade. We're throwing a party to celebrate, and you're invited. Join us during happy hour, 5 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, April 29th, that's coming right up, at Oasis Nightclub in Soma. We'll have food from La Mediterranee and Bacon Bacon, drinks and live music from jazz singer Joshua Klipp, with pianist Holly Mead, who created our theme music, and the SF Gay Men's Chorus Ensemble, the Lollipop Guild. And we'll record a radio show in front of a live audience, you, featuring highlights of our 10 years, including some behind-the-scenes stories. What did John Waters say about gay marriage? Why was Sybil Shepherd so slow to answer her hotel door? Why did Ang Lee make the sheep on Brokeback Mountain sexy? Those stories, live entertainment, food, drink, and socializing Wednesday, April 29th, 5 to 8 p.m. at Oasis Nightclub and Cabaret, 11th and Folsom in San Francisco. We want to meet you. Join us and be part of queer radio history. Less than 2 weeks away, April 29th. More info and tickets at outinthebay.org. Out in the Bay's 10th anniversary celebration is underwritten in part by Schiff Hardin, a general practice law firm representing clients across the United States and around the world with offices in 8 cities, including San Francisco, schiffharden.com, and by Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Portola Valley. Thanks so much, gents. Again, tickets and more information available at our website, outinthebay.org. Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco, is independently produced by me and Marilyn Pittman. We thank KALW for studio use and airtime, and tonight's engineer, Joanne Marr. You can hear tonight's show, a year of past shows, and a dozen of our all-time favorites on our website, outinthebay.org, where you can also sign up for free podcasts and get the Stitcher app to hear radio programs on mobile devices. And get those tickets, outinthebay.org. I'm Eric Jansen. I'm out of here. Thanks for listening.